funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Can the structure and culture of a city make healthy choices easy? Research into so-called blue zones, geographic areas where people are vastly more likely than the average American to live 100 years or more, has revealed some interesting patterns. People in those places tend to get a lot of natural exercise, stop eating before they're completely full, deal well with stress, and have lots of social engagement. And now, Fort Worth is set to join a list of U.S. cities working to turn itself into a blue zone, with initiatives including new sidewalks and bike lanes, more wholesome menus, and discouragements against tobacco use. My guests today are here to talk about how it will all work. Betsy Price is mayor of Fort Worth. Joel Spoonheim is executive director of community programs at Healthways. Mayor Price, Joel, welcome to Think.
Good morning.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Nice to be with you.
How were the original blue zones recognized?
Well, Dan Buettner, who's a National Geographic Fellow, set out with a team of researchers to identify communities that were living longer. And what they found these five communities around the world. And through meeting with people and doing demographic research, they confirmed that they actually were places where people were living longer. And then they sought out to understand what contributed to that. And they found nine elements. And those elements include things like having a sense of purpose in the morning actually helps people live about 7 years longer. Taking time to downshift, you know, taking that 20-minute nap or just getting off the phone or the computer helps. There's taking time to walk and just move naturally throughout the day. They don't actually go to gyms. They don't have fitness programs in these communities. They just move more throughout the day. And then there's a few more elements. And one of the interesting things is a lot of it's around social life. Who you hang out with has a huge impact on your well-being.
Fort Worth already has some of these things going for it, Mayor Price.
Yes, we do. And that is one reason that we are in line to be considered for a Blue Zone designation. We started Fit Worth 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago now. And Fit Worth is an initiative, more process-driven, to get out to engage our employers, to engage our community, to educate our children about the beauty and the benefit of being fit. You know, a community as large as Fort Worth, we're the 16th largest city in the nation now, communities tend to get fractured. And we've always had the beauty of being a small town feel in a big city because people were engaged. And when you get people back out, the city becomes more vibrant, more walkable, just out and engaged. And fit communities are better producing. They're more appealing to employers who are coming in. For us, selfishly, at the city level, it's another tool for economic development because it makes a better community. Our kids are more fit. They're better educated, so they'll be a better workforce long term.
And you didn't wait until, like, Fort Worth has not been named one of the fattest cities in America, or, you know, those designations come out. This is not something that everybody decided to wait until there was a crisis.
No, it's not. There were some indicators that certainly, as most of the nation is, are much higher than we would like for them to be. But we really began looking at it because we wanted to engage our community. We wanted to do something for our students. And we wanted that extra tool in our toolbox to help recruit businesses.
Is it a realistic goal, Joel, that when this is all together, that people in Fort Worth will have a better chance of living to 100? Or is the goal something like living healthier in the years we do have?
It's about living healthier with the years that we do have. Now, some people will get very involved and change their environments and potentially start hitting that 100-year mark. But when we're talking about 800,000 people, which is the soon-to-be population of Fort Worth, our goal is improving the quality of life for people today.
Mm-hmm. And it's not about offering a nanny state. It's about offering choices and making those choices to get out and walk, more sidewalks, more parks to get out and play with your kids. I do Fit 15 with businesses, and we go on their break and tell the community to come join us for a walk, or we'll go after school to the kids' schools and walk with them. And, you know, Joel mentioned earlier that people just don't stay. This time of year, most of the gyms saw such a huge uptake in January. And by mid-February, early March, people quit going. Mm-hmm. It gets boring. The routine is hard. But if you just say, I'm going to make that extra effort to do 15 minutes now, that'll grow into real organic exercise that you don't think about as exercise.
Well, actually, one of the points is sometimes it has to be a choice, but one of the things that our work is doing is making it so it's like the default. It's actually not a thing that you think to do. So let me give you an example. A lot of people don't want to walk in stairwells because they're dark, they're kind of scary, they're not very inviting. We know through research that businesses in particular that open up their stairwells, paint them, get them well lit, employees will start using them more. So that's a simple change where suddenly someone is not thinking about getting exercise. They're just getting it as they go through their day.
And we started a campaign with our Fit Worth that ties nicely in with Blue Zone called Take the Stairs. And we did a contest with Fort Worth ISD, and all the third graders had an opportunity to design posters. And we picked the winners, and now they're showing up at all the businesses. And I've had five or six employees already saying, you know, that kid's drawing that's posted on the elevator door really did make me think I ought to be climbing the stairs and not riding this elevator. So it's small changes as we move forward.
And I suppose if you see your colleagues and your friends taking the stairs, you might feel a little more sheepish about jumping on the elevator.
Well, Joel makes the comment that how you live and what your habits are, your eating and your exercise habits are contagious. And I really do think that's true. Not because of me, but I never take the elevator unless it's five floors or more, and then only when I'm in a hurry. And there are more and more people. The maintenance man at the city the other day commented, said there are fewer people on the elevators and more people in the staircase than we've ever had. And I think it's because we buzz up and down, and there are people walking the upper stairs, and they just, you know, we had have an employee who said, I don't want any part of this when we started the Fort Worth, the Fit 15 initiative for the city. I saw her the other day, and she said, okay, I've met 10 people I didn't know work at the city that I've made good friends with, and I've lost 20 pounds, and I get through my afternoon much more awake than I ever did before. And she said, I'm spreading the word.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. What do we know, Joel, about why membership in a faith community tends to be so good for people's physiological health?
It's a great question. So one of the facts that's out there is that people who show up in a place of worship, and it doesn't matter what denomination, so Christian, Buddhist, Jewish, Muslim, whatever, but people who show up four or more times a month live 4 to 14 years longer than those who don't. And that research was done by two universities fairly well known, Duke and Harvard. And what they discovered is those religious communities provide people a couple of common factors. One is they provide people time to downshift, to truly slow down for an hour or more each week, and that is known to improve well-being. Secondly, people who show up in that kind of community build relationships, and through those relationships, when they hit a tough time, whether it's illness or whatever it may be, that community provides support. And many people may not have that type of support if they aren't involved in a religious community. And then the third piece is research shows that people who volunteer are healthier than those who don't, or that volunteering improves one's health. And in that kind of community, one is often asked to pitch in, volunteer. And so, again, another way that people are layered into behaviors that improve well-being.
Just volunteering makes a huge difference. The cities where people do volunteer, they're just much more engaged. And I really do think our grandparents had it right. They, you know, said pick a church you like or pick a synagogue or a mosque that you want to go to and get to know the people. And nowadays, everybody lives so fractured from their family. Your children, your parents may be way across the nation. It's nice to have somewhere that you're a little bit accountable to.
One of the questions that often comes up is, are we advocating a specific faith or even religiosity? And the answer is no. What we're trying to do is make sure that the research evidence about what contributes to longevity is out there and in front of people. But that is just one of nine elements that really contributes to improving longevity. And so our goal is to just let folks see what these ideas are, and then people pick what's best for them. And that's a really important principle about our work. We're not mandating anything. We're not telling people what to do. What we're trying to do is put a simple menu of best practices in front of people, and then you pick what's right for you.
It really is sort of, in the state of Texas, woe to the person who mandates something that has not been mandated before.
Right. And that's
We're very independent thinkers in Texas.
And so, again, whether it's working with an employer, you know, when we go in and work with an employer, we provide them a menu of ideas of things that they can do, just like with a restaurant or with a school. And so a huge part of our work has been to boil down all this research that's out there and put it into a simple format. So if you're an employer and you're thinking about how do I have more productive employees, we give you a list of things. And most employers today are thinking about benefits. They're thinking about insurance rates, et cetera. What's really interesting is that the research around well-being and productivity suggests that we should actually be thinking about things like the work environment. So when you go to buy a new desk, are you just buying sitting desks, or are your employees actually having lots of back problems and it would be better to buy a standing desk with a bar stool so that you can reduce the prevalence of back pain? So that's the kind of environmental changes that an employer might choose to do. Another thing is vending machines. In a lot of work sites, the vending machine is dominated or exclusively the haven of unhealthy choices. Mm-hmm. We've seen a number of employers go in and set up a policy, in a worksite policy, of saying we want half the food to be healthy. And in fact, once they implement it, when they try to maybe shift what the mix is and go back to maybe more candy bars, what we've heard consistently is no, actually the employees want the healthy choices in there. And so you see like that kind of change is what drives well-being.
And I think that ability to offer those options is critical. Texans are fiercely independent and used to doing pretty much what we want, but people are learning it's all things in moderation. If you go to the restaurant and you say, tonight I want a big steak and I want a baked potato with all the trimming, you're not going to do that every night. But the next night you may go back to another restaurant and you may say, okay, let's look at this menu choices and the sea bass is the better choice or the fish or whatever. But you just have to begin to be very much aware of your surroundings and how it impacts your life and those who live with you too.
What's interesting is that sometimes the environment causes us not to be aware that we're not necessarily making a choice. You know, if it's easier to get on the elevator than it is to take the stairs, we don't feel like we're choosing the elevator. It's just sort of there. What you're trying to do is just open that up to people.
We are. We're trying to offer at the city one thing that we're looking at is 20 years ago or 30 years ago, most major cities went away from sidewalks. People just weren't out as much. And if the kids were going to be out, they were on a bike in the street. And so they kind of did away with sidewalks to give more green space. Well, there's a growing trend back to sidewalks because people do want to walk and they want to walk safely and they want to let their kids on bikes with training wheels. And so the city can begin to say to our developers, as you're putting in a neighborhood, let's talk about sidewalks. Let's talk about the connectivity to the school. Because if you'll look at most of the schools that have been built in the last 20 to 30 years, they're kind of islands from the neighborhood. Back fences surround the schools. And so the kids have to get in someone's car and be driven all the way around to the school that where they can't walk. And one of the newest ones that we're looking at, we're saying, put some walking spaces that come into those school grounds through the neighborhood so that it's easy for students and their parents. Do a walking school bus. Get parents who will lead those walking school buses and say, okay, it's my turn. I'm going to pick up my carpool, so to speak, and we're going to walk. The weather's nice today, and you'll stop and get them and walk them to school. And those are the kind of choices that we can begin to encourage through development for the developers to buy in and work with us on those items.
If I could jump in, just a quick fact that to elaborate on the mayor's point about schools. In 1970, when most neighborhoods had sidewalks, 66% of kids walked to school. Today, it's 12%. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a direct correlation to how we make healthy choices easy or not and the behavior that follows. On a personal basis, I'd love to give an example.
Sure.
In 1970, another fact from that era, the average dinner plate was 10 inches. That's what people had in their homes. Today, it's 12 inches. As a result, research shows that the typical person eating off of these 12-inch plates is eating 22% more calories without noticing it just because they're using a bigger plate. So one of the simple tips that we provide to individuals in our kitchen checklist is maybe swap out your salad plates for your dinner plates or dig grandma's plates that you stuck in the cabinet somewhere out because they're probably 10-inch plates and use those. And as a result, over a year, a person without even noticing it might lose 3 to 5 pounds very easily. No diet, no exercise program, just using a smaller plate.
We're speaking this hour with Joel Spoonheim, Executive Director of Community Programs at Healthways, and Fort Worth Mayor Betsy Price. We're talking about making Fort Worth a blue zone. If you'd like to join us, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372, send email to think@kera.org, or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this summer and fall to design your own master's degree in an area that matters most to you, the arts, human rights, creative writing. More at smu.edu/MLS.
We're not Austin, we're not San Francisco, We are Fort Worth. We don't do mass transit well. We don't do buses. We don't ride bikes. We're not hippies. We're free-spirited. We're cowboys here. We like our meat and potatoes.
That is 33-year-old Carl Roberts II. KERA's Dwahli Saikautau found him eating a lobster pizza at Fireside Pies in Fort Worth. That was his response to what he knows of the Blue Zones project. We're speaking this hour with Fort Worth Mayor Betsy Price and Joel Spoonheim, who's Executive Director of Community Programs at Healthways. Mayor Price, you're not trying to be Austin or San Francisco or anywhere else. Can you just sort of set people's mind to rest who worry that a whole new bunch of restrictive laws are coming along with this?
We absolutely are not. We want to be Cowtown. We want to be who we are. He said, we're Cowtown, we're rodeo, we're that and so much more. But we are not here to regulate anybody's life. We're here to offer. It's not a nanny state. It's an ability to educate and offer choices for people to make. If he wants to go on eating his lobster pizza or his burgers, that's great. You know, but if you offer the education piece for him to learn a little bit more, he may make another choice other days of the week. But we're certainly not legislating anything, just educating and offering a menu of options for people.
What kinds of suggestions are being made, say, to restaurants and to food stores and other places where people are making dietary choices?
So with restaurants, there's a number of things. Again, with every one of these sectors, we have a menu of choices for them. So with a restaurateur, it can be everything back to that notion of what size plate are they serving food on. Or another thing that's really striking is because big portions are popular, there's a whole part of the population that doesn't actually want the big portion, at least not when they sit down. And so offering a half-size portion, but you can charge 70% of the price of the full price. And what we find is restaurateurs don't know the research on pricing often as well. And suddenly they can increase their margin by serving a half-size portion, which makes their customer happier, which makes them more likely to be a repeat customer. There are other things like don't put salt on the table. Have it available upon request. But so many folks grab the salt right away without actually tasting the food, and it's an easy way to help lower blood pressure rates. So there's simple things that don't cost the restaurateur anything and can help grow their margin and make their customer base happy.
And one of our major restaurateurs told me recently that he had started just working on this kind of on his own, and he said, I decided to take bread baskets off the table. And if they want them, it's available. People can ask for it. But he said, for my bottom line, I've already saved 10 to 20% of cost because the majority of people won't ask for that bread if it's not there. And so for an employer, it can be a potential or a restaurateur cost-saving item for them also.
And it makes perfect sense, right? Because most of us know we don't need a piece of bread right before dinner. But if it's in front of us with some good butter, we're going to eat it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, and in fact, there's a diner that we've been working with in California in one of the communities that we've been working with for about 3 years. And now, just to set the stage here, this diner's on Pacific Coast Highway. It's car mecca, right? Mm-hmm. No different than any major thoroughfare in Texas. So it's car mecca. It's a diner. It's a greasy spoon. That's what they've been known for over 50 years. And they started selling more healthy food. And in fact, today, by adding some really phenomenal, tasty food, not only are all the folks who come in for the greasy spoon, as always, are still coming in, but they've grown their customer base and actually are generating over 35% of their revenue from healthy choices. So it's been great for businesses. And I could tell you another story about a truck stop on Interstate 35 on the other side of the country up in Minnesota that we worked with. And that truck stop, again, similar idea, just started adding some more healthy choices, which in this case was they still kept their lumberjack massive platters, but they offered a half-size portion. Interestingly enough, truckers have said they are now driving to that truck stop because it's a healthy choice. And so they're growing their business. And in addition, townsfolk are coming into that truck stop more than before because they have the best salad bar in town. So it's this interesting situation where they still offer the lumberjack meals, but they have other options and it's growing their business.
And my husband and I frequent a couple of restaurants who have already started the idea of putting the calorie count on the menu or up on the board if it's a faster food one of what you might order. And, you know, I'll bypass some of our old favorites just because I think I need to go and see. Today I'm looking for something lighter. Or if I've got a personal favorite, I think today is my splurge day and I'm going to go order that. But we've got a lot of friends who say, yeah, we really like those calorie counts that are showing up because it does make us think about what we're ordering.
And it's shocking sometimes, right, when you find out something you've been eating for years and but what's in it exactly.
It really is. I mean, you've got this great salad that you've been eating for ages and you suddenly look at it on your menu and you go,
I thought I was doing myself a great favor, and this salad is 700 calories. Mm-hmm. It is shocking.
Let's talk about schools, because particularly in public schools, many children are eating 2 out of their 3 weekday meals a day at a campus setting.
Yeah, they are. And I do a fair amount of reading to the kids in schools. And my young leaders group called Steer Fort Worth has done a pilot program with some of the schools. And they started out offering, a couple of them are chefs, and they went in and asked, could we work with the school cafeteria to make healthier choice available? One thing that they found was on the lunch line, the lower menus, the corn dogs, the french fries, the pizzas are all down low. The apples, the oranges, the skim milk are up on a high shelf. Mm. Well, small children don't even see those on the higher shelf. So they went in and rearranged the lunch line, put the skim milk first and the apples and oranges, and the kids would pick them. And then they'd go down the line and maybe have a piece of pizza to go with that. Then they went back and totally revamped the hot menus that the kids were offering. And what they found is that the kindergartners through about third graders would eat the healthier options, but the fourth and fifth graders had grown used to those fatty foods and high foods, and they would sample them, but it took them longer to come around to that.
So we got to start early.
You need to get them early. And you need to offer those. Other piece they had was they would offer after-school cooking classes for the kids and their parents so that the kids could learn to cook and the parents could too. And an amazing number of parents came in and said, I've never thought to cook like this. Mm. And they, you know, that makes a big difference. Live that example and let the kids take it home and say, hey, Mom, make me baked french fries instead of fried ones. And they're easy.
So also on the school's front, I know there's a lot of concern about the food that's being served. But interestingly enough, when you serve it can have a huge impact. Here's an interesting fact that people may not know. Most of us, when we went to elementary school, we got to the noon hour and we went to lunch and then we went to recess and then back to class. And what happens in that situation is kids eat their favorite food, throwing away what is often the most nutritionally dense food because all they want to do is get out and play. Mm-hmm. If the policy of the school, which costs $0, is to reverse that order, so kids go play first, then eat. What the evidence shows is, A, the kids play better because they're not playing on a half-full stomach. B, they eat all of their food so they get the full nutritional load, which also reduces the waste so the taxpayer expense on throwing away food goes down. And third, the teachers report that they pick up 3 minutes of teaching time every day. Well, 3 minutes is hours of learning in the course of a school year. So this is a free policy that we're working to get implemented in communities that we work in. So that's, you know, just changing the order of the day. Another simple thing is not only paying attention to what is being served in the lunchroom, but is what is not being eaten in between. A lot of schools allow kids to eat snacks, especially older kids, in the hallways or in the classroom. And, you know, the vast majority of those snacks are far from healthy. And so schools that don't allow snacking outside of, you know, the lunchroom reduce their cleanup costs because there's not food being spilled. They improve the nutritional outcomes of kids because they're not filling up on junk food. And so you have just a simple policy just saying we don't want to clean up and allow it during, you know, classrooms and hallways improves everyone's benefits.
And you're right. The kids are eating breakfast and lunch. I think 60% of the kids in Fort Worth ISD have 2 meals a day or more there. And so it's critical. That can be the total basis of their nutrition for the day. And a lot of those kids also have the backpack for kids programs on the weekends where they pack a backpack with food and send it home with them. And we're working closely with the food bank who distributes those to try to get better choices for the weekend activities for those kids.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Kelly in Colleyville. Hi, Kelly.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
I lived in the Dallas area, then I moved to Seattle, Washington, and I lived in a little area called Magnolia, and we had a village that kind of had everything we needed, and I had my 2 sons while living there. I rarely drove my car. I put them in the stroller, walked down to the village. Everything I needed, basically for like my daily errand running, was right there. We had the coffee shop, the park, the school, the post office, dry cleaners, grocery store, drugstore, everything right there. And when I moved back to the Dallas area, I kind of even asked my real estate agent, could you please find me somewhere where I can walk to things, walk to my daily, you know, errands? And it's like virtually non-existent around here, and I love what Fort Worth is doing and the Fitworth. They're doing so many amazing things, and I see change coming to some of the urban areas. But I'm wondering, is there anything going on in the suburbs?
You know, there is. Fort Worth has a strong focus right now on our urban villages, which are exactly what you're talking about. It's live, work, play in the same area, the ability possibly for you to own single cars. But we simply can't think about just our inside the ring, as we call it, where most of the urban villages are. We're working closely with our developers now to in the outer areas, in the suburbs, to encourage them to build more dense areas that have medical offices, that have grocery stores, that have the dry cleaner, the ability to walk to that school, so that maybe all you do is drive to your job and come back, and all the rest of your errands you can do in that same general area. Essentially, it will become a suburban village. The term is urban villages because the focus has been inside the loop. But we are working to encourage those suburban villages also, because growing, there's more and more trend growing that younger folks really don't want two cars. They want the ability to, as you said, to push your stroller or your basket and take your kids, or to ride your bicycles and get around. And one of the ways we're going to encourage that is with a complete streets program that allows not only car access on those streets, but the ability for you to walk or ride a bike to the grocery store also.
Can you speak for a minute, Mayor Price, about culture? Because we've had an issue in a number of cities throughout North Texas with many more people wanting to ride bikes. In some cases, bike lanes being built. In some cases, people using regular streets, which they have every right to do under the law. A lot of motorists, however, have not received the message and feel like cyclists are in their way rather than just getting around the way they have a right to do.
Yeah, it's critical that we educate people about the fact that bicycles do, by law, they are a vehicle that can be on the streets. But the flip side of that is we have to do our part and educate the cyclist also. And you probably know that I'm an avid cyclist and ride all the time. And nothing irritates me worse than to have a pack of cyclists come buzzing through, taking up the whole street. So it's a share and share alike. And it is a shift in cultural mentality. Texas has not been used to having. We're used to having the cyclist on the trails only. But more and more people are commuting or are just getting out and get their exercise. And as our trails get more crowded with people walking and running, you're going to see more bicycles on the streets. And it will be a gradual shift in this complete streets program that we're talking about, encouraging our planners, encouraging our taxpayers to get used to the fact that we may compress some of the streets for bike lanes, but we won't do that on all streets. There are areas where it just doesn't work, and we don't want to take away busy neighborhood streets or busy areas, but we want to, in the areas where it's amenable, add that ability for people to get out. You also are dealing with, we have a problem because we have so many people who are on motorized scooters or wheelchairs, and they can't get to and from the grocery store. There's no lane for them. So it's not just for bicyclists. It's pedestrians. It's anyone who doesn't necessarily want to be in their car.
All this sounds really great. And Joel, the anecdotes that you've shared are very impressive. But anecdotes are one thing, and actually measuring results, that's another thing entirely. Can you talk about how this program intends to do that?
Yeah, so HealthWays, I think it's important to understand who we are. We work with 40 million people around the world every day, and our partners are typically hospital systems and insurance companies and large employers, and metrics are absolutely essential to our partners. For the community work that we do, we collect measures on a number of fronts, and we work with Gallup, the polling firm, and with Gallup and HealthWays, they set up a 25-year partnership to create what's called the Well-Being Index. And the well-being index measures the five elements of well-being that really help us understand how is a community, how are individuals doing, and how productive are workforce populations. So when we work in a community, we measure the community's well-being before we start, and then we measure it on a regular basis thereafter to track our progress. And what's amazing about the well-being index is we're able to not only benchmark the community against itself, but against neighboring cities, the region, the state, the nation. And it really helps the community understand what are we doing well, what are areas for us to improve, and to provide a real laser focus. Let me put this in the context of when an employer uses this, because part of our work is, again, with large employers. Some of our national partners, they've got big companies, and they can actually measure on the division level of a company. And so you can look at some of your most high-performing teams, and you can then see something that's standing out, like, what's wrong here? and they can see that productivity may be declining, and they might think, well, what's the cause? Is it a health issue? Is it a leadership issue? And our well-being instrument allows us to really assess, you know, is it leadership? Is it equipment? Is it health? And then, you know, focus on those types of solutions. So we measure using the well-being index. Then, of course, we work on measures at the grassroots level. What is happening with volunteerism? What's happening with sales in restaurants, in grocery stores? And when you compile enough anecdotal evidence, you really can start to see trends. So that, for example, in Iowa, one of the communities we're working in, one of their employers, the larger employers, has had 15% increases year after year after year in their healthcare claims. They started working with us, implementing the menu of pledge items that were best for them. And last year, their claims cost only went up 1.4%. So we collect a lot of that type of evidence as well that's happening across employers. So you can start seeing what's happening directly there, plus the more broad community data.
Are there employers in Fort Worth, Mayor Price, who've said, this is all well and good, but I'm not paying my workers to be fit on the job. I'm paying them to do the job. And are those things mutually exclusive?
No, they are not. In fact, we're seeing just the opposite. The vast majority of our businesses that we're talking to are going, we understand next to their payroll, their second biggest cost item for an employer is health care. Whether it's factoring in the lost productivity, whether it's the fact that someone has to be absenteeism because they have a sick child. So they're all really taking a hard look at the metrics on this well-being and the fact that they can leverage those precious dollars for their employees and they get more productivity. You traditionally will see corporations tell you that their afternoon slide after lunch or after break, it's just not near as productive as it is. And when you've got a well-being program in place and they encourage them to either eat a little healthier or to get out and move, they historically see a better return. And most of them are beginning to measure that. With Joel's program, with HealthWise, I think you're going to see a whole lot more of it. Those metrics will allow us to leverage tax dollars, too, to produce better public-private partnerships.
We're speaking this hour about making Fort Worth a blue zone with Fort Worth Mayor Betsy Price and Joel Spoonheim, Executive Director of Community Programs at HealthWise. You can join the conversation by emailing think@kera.org or by calling 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this summer and fall to design your own master's degree in an area that matters most to you, the arts, human rights, creative writing. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour about making Fort Worth a blue zone with Fort Worth Mayor Betsy Price and Joel Spoonheim, who is Executive Director of Community Programs at HealthWise. You can join us by emailing think@kera.org or calling 1-800-933-5372. Joel, did you want to follow up on what you have learned about businesses' willingness or unwillingness to participate in programs like these?
Thanks, Chris. Couple quick points. Employers get the importance of well-being. They know, as evidence shows, that an employee with low well-being has a 4 times greater chance of a short-term disability, has 4 times more unplanned missed absences at work. They have a higher likelihood of quitting. So employees with high well-being are more productive, they're more reliable. And so there's a huge reason for employers to invest in good well-being. But here's the challenge they're facing is they're doing it typically in isolation. Most employers are trying to make a difference to improve their employees' lives, but they only have them the 40 or so hours they're in the building. And so what we're doing that's differently is helping that employer's investment go a lot further because suddenly now it's coordinated with what's happening in schools, in restaurants, in places of worship, et cetera, in people's lives. And so employers get excited because for once it feels like their investment is going to really start to add up beyond what's happening in the building.
Any concerns that these economic arguments in favor of employers encouraging healthy behaviors among their employees are tacitly sort of an encouragement to discriminate against people who might have a disability or a chronic health condition that are perfectly capable of getting the job done but are frankly not as healthy as the general population?
I don't think so, because this is, remember, again, we're not talking about a mandate here. We're talking about offering the option. And most employers understand discrimination laws. They understand that some of their employees will never fit into these goals. But they're valued employees, and they bring another level of skill to the table. And if they can help them improve, then so be it. Most of them just, that we haven't seen that to be an issue yet at all.
Another aspect, Joel, that I found really interesting in the Buettner research is that noise can be a major source of stress for people. Talk about the extent to which that exists in Fort Worth and what can be done about it.
So a lot of that research is about worksite noise. And I can just share with you that emerging best practice in a lot of office settings in particular is to have kind of a white noise machine that is there to help take some of the edge off the sharpness of noises as they go up and down, in addition to having noise baffling forms in the ceiling, et cetera. And again, it's just that those sharp, loud noises are hard on individuals. And so one of the things we want to do is educate employers to think about that. And then as they look to make investments, there's some that are relatively low cost that they can put in place that will create a better work environment.
And thank goodness most employers really are beginning to think about a healthier, kinder, gentler workplace for their employees to be, because it contributes to better productivity. People want to come to work. If you're constantly bombarded with noise and at the end of the week you're like, I'm so on edge, I can't stand it, ultimately you end up quitting.
Yeah.
What happens at the end of the 5 years?
The hope is that at the end of the 5 years, we will have educated enough people that the business community will have bought in, the chamber, the churches, the city as a whole, and this program will continue on continue to grow.
So, and what we're seeing is Fort Worth is like many of the communities that we worked with. We find a couple folks right up front, like Mayor Price, like Texas Health Resources, who originally invited us to come in. Like Bill Thornton at the Chamber and his board. So we find those key leaders who get involved right away. What really is exciting is when restaurants start saying, yeah, you know, my customer base is growing, the other restaurateurs start saying, oh, maybe we should do that because that healthy thing is working. When schools start seeing kids performing better because they've made changes, there's no need for a program per se, because success breeds success. People are going to try to keep up with the folks who are succeeding. And so are an effort of changing the environment and having those wins and telling people about those wins causes a community to continue this change over time. Are we going to be able to fix everything in the next 5 years? Heck no. We're talking culture and generations, but we can have enough people having a great experience that it will further that success on its own.
It goes back to what you see and what you do can be so contagious. People begin to live it, and other people say, well, you know, look at Christy over here. She's really doing well. Maybe I need to look at that. And it starts young. It starts with the young children, too. And in another 20 years, this will be the norm and not the exception.
So getting local restaurants on board is a big enough job in itself, but it doesn't necessarily address the preponderance of chains that people may love them or hate them, but they are employers in the local market, right? You don't want to put them all out of business, but it's much harder to convince your neighborhood Chili's or Burger King to make these kinds of changes, is it not?
It is. And they're making some of those changes because consumers are demanding them. I mean, we can just see with some of the national chains that kids' meals have gotten significantly better in the last couple of years. Are they as healthy as they could be? No, but they're moving in the right direction. And Fort Worth is really exciting in a way that they have close to 800 independently owned restaurants. 800. Well, if we can get a couple hundred of them changing their ways, and one of the things that we do in a community is for folks that do good work, we reward them with like free marketing and free promotions. So not only do they, with their own efforts, start seeing reward, but we're going to promote it, and that will cause it to spread. And, you know, you can change the marketplace by giving customers more choices, and that's what we see happening.
And people generally change the marketplace with their own vote, so to speak. It's the old adage, vote with your pocketbook. If after a while you realize if my favorite fast food chain isn't offering at least a few choices that will help me live better, I'll go to the one down the street that is. And then pretty quick they'll say, we're losing our customer base, and follow in with you.
We have an email here from Steve who says, are there plans to create pedestrian-only streets in downtown Fort Worth as many European cities have? if not full-time pedestrian, perhaps 1 or 2 days a week?
We have not really looked at that yet. Our downtown area is pretty busy. You know, we opened our new Sundance Square this year. That's a great pedestrian ability to get around, to walk. It's a full acre that no cars in that area and a nice place to go out. We do have a couple of our companies who are very concerned about the safety downtown, and we have, with the city, are going in and looking at the length of the traffic lights to see that there's adequate time for people to cross, the ability for younger and older to get across. How appealing is that crossing? And more than that, how well marked is it? Probably we will not close any streets, but we're going to try to make downtown's already one of the most walkable, livable cities in the nation, but we could make it even better. All of our downtown currently has sidewalks, and if any places where they're rough, we're going to try to go back in and smooth those out.
Joel, many people who understand perfectly well that tobacco is bad for their health in the long term are still struggling with an addiction to nicotine. Can you talk about ways to assist people in staying away from tobacco when they might not be happy about their use of tobacco in the first place?
Well, I heard two questions, and one was actually about how do you help someone who's using tobacco move from that practice. So two things. One is when we kick this off, one of the things that we're going to help make available to smokers is a program called QuitNet that HealthWays puts into these communities. It's a social media site that has been incredibly powerful for helping smokers quit because they're hanging out with other smokers who are on that journey as well. And there's hardly a smoker that hasn't tried to quit at some point, and we recognize that. And part of that then is then working with employers as they may be working on their own tobacco policies. One of the most important things is not just to simply like ban smoking, but you need to put in place the counseling and the other resources to help employees in that transition to non-smoking. So it's just really important that we recognize it's an addiction, it needs to be managed as such, and provide the resources to help people move through it. At the same time, the majority of people in Fort Worth don't smoke. The data is very clear about that. And especially with children, as we look at health conditions, we want to make sure that kids aren't exposed to secondhand smoke. So there are opportunities to improve the lives of children in Fort Worth and in many cities, like making sure that when they're playing ball in the park, that it is a smoke-free park. And so those are some of the things that we're going to put out there as things for the city to consider. And they may or may not do it. They may pilot it. They may not. But those are some of the things that we'll throw out there.
And those are certainly the options that we as a city and as a city council will have the opportunity to look at to get a feel for how our citizens feel about it. Do they just want the ability to vote with their feet, not go in bars and restaurants where they're smoking, or do they want some regulation? Currently, we have no smoking in public places, but we don't mandate private operations.
Mm-hmm. What about people who want to smoke? I mean, are they just out of luck these days?
I think their opportunity to smoke, particularly in public areas, is greatly reduced. But most of the people I know who smoke still find the opportunity to smoke somewhere.
I want to talk about one of the sort of harder to quantify things on this list, which is this idea of finding meaning in one's life. How exactly do you encourage this? And is it just making people aware that this matters as much as it does?
So, again, the research about this is people with a sense of purpose live 7 years longer than those who don't. And first job is just to make people aware of it. And it's that gnawing thing that you may not actually have words for. And one of our goals is to educate the community about this notion of purpose. And they may use other words, but they get the idea. What we do is help people through a couple of different tools. One is just making them aware. We do run a purpose workshop. And what we've done is worked with Richard Leiter and Barbara Hazy, two incredible, well-renowned experts. Richard's got 7 books, The Power of Purpose being one. And in 2 hours, it's amazing how you can help somebody kind of jumpstart their search for purpose or to restart it. And, you know, less time than it takes to watch a movie, you can start thinking about where am I at in my own journey? How do I put words to this? And where do I want to go? And at the end of those 2 hours, we provide people other ways that they can continue thinking about it. And whether it's they are retired, whether it's they are a stay-at-home parent or they're working, it doesn't matter where you're at in life. There's a way to explore your purpose and then to live into it.
And I think part of going in with that at the city level is the engagement piece. Yeah. So many people do live in isolation now. Maybe they've got one or two close friends. The numbers prove that, you know, 10 years ago, everybody had many more friends than they do now. If you ask, more people will say, yeah, I've got a couple of close friends. And used to, you'd ask, and they'd say, yeah, I got 8 or 10 friends. But getting people out and getting them engaged in their neighborhood, engaged in their child's school. My daughter-in-law who teaches says parents don't come to school like they used to. They really don't. But just get, and that begins to wake people up and think, what am I doing here? And why am I really working on this? And what are we going to do? And starting to volunteer somewhere, going to the hospital or going to one of the nursing homes or even going back to school to read for kids. They reconnect with their community. And that, for me, I think the engagement piece drives the purpose as much as anything.
What is the cost of all of this?
So we're still working out the numbers. And so, but what I would like to point out is, what's the cost of not doing anything? It's actually a really striking number. Fort Worth is not different than most cities in America. It's on an unhealthy track right now as a whole in terms of the claims trends, et cetera. We worked to put together a model to estimate what is the cost of the current trends. And if Fort Worth keeps doing what it's doing, which means keeps doing all the great stuff it's doing to improve people's health, employers keep investing in employees' health as they are today, over the next 10 years, the cost of health is going to go up, or cost of poor health is going to go up $5 billion. Between the actual claims costs and the lost productivity, the current trends of increasing obesity, increasing rates of diabetes, et cetera, and the aging population, costs are going to go up $5 billion. That's real money that people are going to pay either as employers or as individuals. We believe that a community that's like Fort Worth that really invests in this can save over $1 billion within 5 years against that number of $5 billion. I mean, we can really change course and start creating savings. And that's what we're working to do.
And this is a privately funded program. We don't have city tax dollars in this. If you're a taxpayer in Fort Worth, your tax dollars are not in it. Our job at the city is to offer the encouragement, the coordination, potentially policy changes that might make this easier, but it will be privately funded.
So, but new sidewalks and bike lanes, those are just sort of regular city budget items? Is that?
Many of those are in our city budget, or they'll be in our bond election. And they're one of the things, we're about to hold a bond election in May. And sidewalks and the ability to connect crosswalks was one of the big items that people asked for. Parks, community centers where they can actually get out. And, you know, if they approve the bond election, they're agreeing that that's where we want to spend that dollars. But actual funding for Blue Zone and the ability to deliver this product will be privately funded.
We've been speaking this hour with Betsy Price, who is mayor of Fort Worth, and Joel Spoonheim, executive director of community programs at HealthWays, talking about making Fort Worth a blue zone. Joel, Mayor Price, it's been very nice to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We enjoyed it.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer. We had help on the phones today from Gus Contreras. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. You can contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.